The Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are diving into a book that, well, you've definitely heard of it, maybe even argued about its title, Mark Manson's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fick.
Yeah, that title, it's deliberately provocative, right?
Yeah.
But the book itself, it's kind of an anti-self-help book.
Yeah.
It goes against so much of what we're usually told.
Exactly. And that's why we're tackling it today. There's just so much pressure, you know?
Yeah.
Be positive all the time. Be amazing. Show off this perfect life online. It can be exhausting.
Yeah, it really can. So our mission here is to kind of cut through that noise. We want to unpack Manson's ideas, which are surprisingly practical, actually, for building a life that feels more, well, authentic and grounded.
Right. And I think it's important to say up front, this isn't about just like throwing your hands up and not caring about anything. That's a big misunderstanding, isn't it?
Totally. It's not apathy at all. Think of it more like emotional budgeting. You only have so much energy, so many fucks to give, as Manson puts it.
Right.
So the subtle art is about being smart with that budget. Stop spending it on, you know, petty arguments or what random people think or things you can't even control.
And instead,
you save that energy. You invest it strategically in the things that genuinely matter to you, your values, your relationships, the struggles you actually choose. It's about caring smarter, not less.
Okay, I like that. Caring smarter.
Mm-hmm.
So who is this guy, Mark Manson, who delivers this philosophical punch in such a, well, blunt way?
Well, what's interesting about Manson is he's not coming from like a formal academic background in psychology or anything. He's an American author, blogger, entrepreneur. He built a huge following online.
Started with dating advice, right? Then broadened out.
Exactly. He started there, but then moved into bigger life questions, philosophy, cultural critique. He's a really sharp observer of, you know, modern life.
And his style is definitely unique.
Yeah.
Not your typical guru whispering affirmations.
Nah, not at all. That's his whole appeal, I think. He takes these really big, sometimes heavy ideas. You can see threads of stoicism, existentialism, even Buddhism in there. But he translates them into this very direct, no-nonsense, sometimes sweary modern language.
Yeah, you can say that.
And he's not afraid to challenge that whole overly optimistic, just think positive self-help culture. He's basically saying, look, life is messy. Sometimes it sucks. Let's deal with reality. That honesty really resonates with people today, I think. He's selling reality, not just feel-good fantasies.
Okay, so let's dig into the core idea of the book. What's the central argument Manson's making?
The main thing is this. A good life, a meaningful life, isn't found by trying to get rid of all your problems or constantly chasing happiness like it's some destination.
Because that's impossible, right?
Exactly. Life is problems. You solve one, another one pops up. It's just the nature of things. So Manson argues the goal isn't to have no problems. The goal is to choose good problems, problems you're willing to engage with, struggles that align with your values.
So you shift from how do I avoid pain to
what pain am I willing to sustain? Or even what problems do I want to have? Because solving problems, engaging in those chosen struggles, that's actually where satisfaction and meaning come from. It's a total reframe.
That leads perfectly into this concept he calls the feedback loop from hell. It sounds bad.
Yeah.
Can you break that down? It seems key to understanding why we get stuck.
Oh, it's crucial. And yeah, it is bad. It's that horrible cycle where you start feeling bad about feeling bad.
Like getting anxious about the fact that you're anxious.
Precisely. Or feeling guilty because you're angry. Or feeling like a loser because you feel sad or lonely. You've got the initial negative feeling, right?
Yeah.
But then you layer on the second wave of negativity, judgment, shame, panic about the first feeling.
And that just makes everything worse.
Exponentially worse. You're stuck stressing about your stress. It's a self-perpetuating cycle of misery.
So the core insight of the book, then, is that we need to stop seeing negative experiences, suffering, uncertainty. Stop seeing them as like bugs in the system.
Exactly. Manson argues they're not bugs, they're features. They are inherent parts of life. And true resilience, true psychological well-being comes from accepting that. Accepting reality, negatives and all.
And when you do that?
The moment you stop fighting the initial negative feeling, the moment you give yourself permission to just feel anxious or sad or whatever it is without judging yourself for it, that secondary loop breaks.
Wow. Instant relief, almost.
Pretty much. You cut off that second layer of suffering. It doesn't necessarily make the first problem go away instantly, but it stops the spiraling. You accept the discomfort, and paradoxically, that reduces the overall pain.
Okay, that flips the script entirely. So if acceptance is the start, how do we actually stop chasing that elusive butterfly of happiness? Let's get into some of the key chapters. You mentioned the backwards law earlier.
Right, chapter one, don't try. This introduces the backwards law. It's this paradoxical idea that the more desperately you chase feeling good all the time, the more anxious and dissatisfied you become. Wanting positive experience is itself a negative experience.
Okay, that sounds counterintuitive. He uses Charles Bukowski as an example, right? The writer with the epitaph, don't try.
Yeah, Bukowski, a famously messy nonconformist writer.
Mm-hmm.
Manson's take is that don't try doesn't mean be lazy or give up. It means stop trying to be something you're not.
Ah, so it's about authenticity.
Exactly. Bukowski wasn't trying to be a polished literary figure. He was just brutally honest about who he was, flaws and all. The not trying is about accepting your true self, your reality. Success or contentment then becomes a byproduct of that honesty and acceptance, not the result of striving for some fake ideal.
That makes more sense. It's not apathy, it's acceptance.
Huh?
Which leads nicely into chapter two. Happiness is a problem. He has this character. Disappointment Panda.
Ah, yes, Disappointment Panda. Love this guy. He's like the superhero whose only power is to show up and tell people harsh truths.
Like what?
Like most of your achievements will be forgotten, or you're probably not as special as you think. Things nobody wants to hear.
Ouch, why is that helpful?
Because it reinforces the idea that life is problems. Happiness isn't the absence of problems, it's the feeling you get from solving them. So the panda, by delivering uncomfortable truths, forces you to confront reality and ask the really important question. What problem do I want to solve? What struggle is meaningful to me?
Okay. Then chapter three hits hard. You are not special. This feels like a direct challenge to a lot of modern thinking.
Oh, absolutely. Manson takes aim at what he sees as an entitlement culture, you know, fueled partly by social media, constantly showing curated perfection, maybe decades of everyone gets a trophy. Self-esteem movements.
The idea that everyone is destined for greatness.
Kind of, yeah. Or at least deserves greatness without necessarily putting in the extraordinary effort. And when reality inevitably serves up average results for most things, because statistically, most of us are average at most things, this entitlement leads to frustration and bitterness.
But isn't accepting your average kind of depressing?
Manson argues it's the opposite. It's liberating. True self-worth doesn't come from delusion, from believing you're amazing. It comes from a realistic assessment of yourself. Accepting your averageness frees you from the crushing pressure to be exceptional at everything.
So you can focus.
Exactly. You can focus your limited energy, your limited fucks, on the one or two things you genuinely care about and where you might actually develop real competence and make a difference. It's a huge relief, actually.
Okay, I can see that.
Hmm.
Now let's connect this acceptance to values. Chapter 4. The value of suffering seems to dig deeper into why we care about things.
Right. So pain isn't just something to avoid. Manson says it's nature's preferred agent for inspiring change. It tells us something is wrong. And to understand what needs changing, we need self-awareness. He uses the metaphor of the self-awareness onion.
An onion. How did that work?
You peel back layers. The outer layers might be understanding your basic emotions, then maybe your reactions. But the deepest layer, the core of the onion, is understanding your values.
Why are values so fundamental?
Because our values, whether we're conscious of them or not, are the underlying metrics we use to judge everything. They determine what we consider success or failure, good or bad. They literally dictate our emotional responses to life.
And he makes a distinction between good and bad values, right? Good ones are things like honesty, curiosity.
Yes. Good values are generally reality-based, socially constructive, and importantly, internally controllable, like choosing to be honest or choosing to learn new things.
And bad values. Things like
popularity, being liked by everyone, always being the center of attention, having more status symbols than the next person.
Why are those so bad? They seem pretty common goals.
They're destructive because they're often superficial, dependent on external validation, and largely outside your direct control. If your main value is everyone must like me, you're setting yourself up for misery because you can't control other people's opinions. You're basically handing over your emotional well-being to others. It guarantees you'll have bad problems.
That makes sense. Your happiness depends on things you can't influence, which leads right into chapter 5. You are always choosing. This is where that crucial fault versus responsibility distinction comes
in. Yes,
this is huge. Manson stresses, you might not be at fault for everything bad that happens to you. You know, a hurricane hits your town, you get laid off due to company downsizing, not your fault.
Right.
But you are always 100% responsible for how you choose to interpret that event and how you choose to respond to it, always. That choice, that response, is where your power lies.
He uses the story of William James, the psychologist, doesn't he? Battling depression.
Incredible story. Jaws was in a really dark place, felt powerless. He decided, as an experiment almost, to spend 1 year acting as if he were completely responsible for everything in his life, including his own recovery.
He chose responsibility, even if he didn't feel it.
Exactly. He focused on his actions, his responses, regardless of fault or feelings. And that choice, that commitment to responsible action, ultimately transformed his life. It shows you can, quite literally, act your way into a different state of being.
Wow. That's empowering, but also kind of scary. It puts it all on you.
It does. It's radical responsibility.
Really?
And to wield that power effectively, Chapter 6 argues, you need humility. You're wrong about everything, but so am I. We need to hold our beliefs a bit more lightly.
Treat them like hypotheses, not absolute truths.
Pretty much. Because growth requires being able to admit when you're wrong, to update your understanding. But we resist this, don't we? Because our beliefs become tied to our identity.
Which brings us to Manson's law of avoidance.
Right. The more something threatens your identity, the more you will avoid it. If admitting you're wrong about a core belief feels like a personal attack, like you're losing a part of yourself, you'll fight tooth and nail to avoid that realization.
He uses that extreme example. The Japanese soldier, Hiro Onoda.
Yeah, Onoda. Fought World War II in the jungle for nearly 30 years after the war ended because he couldn't accept the fundamental truth that Japan had surrendered. His identity was so wrapped up in being a soldier fighting that war, certainty became his prison. It's a stark reminder that being too attached to being right can be incredibly limiting, even dangerous.
Okay, so we need acceptance, good values, responsibility, humility. What about actually doing things, moving forward?
That brings us to Chapter 7. Failure is the way forward. This flips the script on failure. Instead of something to be ashamed of or avoided at all costs, failure is presented as essential data. It's feedback.
You can't succeed without it.
Basically, yeah. Improvement comes from learning from failures. And if you're stuck, feeling unmotivated, Manson offers the do something principle.
100%.
Don't wait for inspiration to strike. Just do something, anything. Action isn't just the effect of motivation. It can also be the cause of it. Taking even a small action creates momentum, which can spark inspiration, which fuels more action. It's a loop, but a positive one.
So action first, motivation follows. I like that. But action often involves other people or choosing not to do things. That sounds like Chapter 8, the importance of saying no.
Exactly. This is about boundaries and commitment. To truly commit to something of a value, a relationship, a project, you necessarily have to reject alternatives. You have to say no to other things.
Just say yes to everything.
You end up spread thin, committed to nothing, and probably giving way too many fucks about things that don't actually align with your core values. Saying no, setting boundaries, even if it causes temporary discomfort or conflict, is vital for building a strong sense of self and healthy non-codependent relationships. It defines what you stand for by clarifying what you stand against.
Makes sense. You define yourself by your choices, including what you reject. And finally, the ultimate perspective shift in Chapter 9. You go, and then you die. A bit grim.
It sounds grim, but Manson presents it as ultimately liberating. He draws on Ernest Becker's ideas about how we try to deny death, creating immortality projects to feel like we'll leave a lasting mark.
But Manson says facing mortality head-on is key.
Yes. He argues that consciously confronting the reality of your own limited time is the most powerful way to clarify what truly matters. When you realize the clock is ticking, all the petty dramas, the trivial anxieties, the need for constant validation, a lot of that just falls away.
It puts everything in perspective.
Instantly, it forces you to ask, given my limited time, what is really worth struggling for? What legacy do I want to leave? What values will define my life? Acceptance of death, paradoxically, injects life with meaning and urgency.
Okay, wow. That's a lot to absorb.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to boil this down, what are the maybe three or four most actionable takeaways someone listening could grab onto right now?
Okay, first big one. Reject toxic positivity. Seriously, stop trying to force yourself to feel happy all the time. Allow negative emotions. See them as signals, not signs of failure. Doing that alone breaks the feedback loop from hell and cuts down so much unnecessary suffering.
Right. Feel the feeling. Don't feel bad about the feeling. What's next?
Second, Choose your struggles. Remember, your identity isn't defined by your desires or fantasies. It's defined by what you're willing to consistently work and struggle for. So take an honest look. Are the problems occupying your time and energy good problems aligned with your values, like learning a skill, building strong relationships, or bad problems driven by ego or external validation, like impressing people you don't like?
Consciously pick your battles, basically. Okay, number three.
Embrace radical responsibility. This is the fault versus responsibility thing. Let go of blaming circumstances or other people. It might not be your fault, but your response is always your choice. Focus your energy there on how you interpret things and what you do next. That's where your power is.
Huge. And number four.
Values are the foundation. Everything stems from your values, the metrics you use to measure your life. Critically examine them. Are they internal and controllable, like honesty, effort, or external and uncontrollable, like status, being liked? If your values are shaky or based on comparison, you're building your life on sand. Change your values, you change the game.
It really does all seem to connect back to those core values, doesn't it?
It really does. It's the bedrock.
Manson's writing is so memorable, too. Those blunt, quotable lines really stick. Let's touch on a few key ones, like the first one you mentioned. The desire for more positive experience is itself a negative experience.
Yeah, that's the backwards law in a nutshell. It highlights the paradox. Desperately chasing happiness often makes you less happy. Acceptance and contentment tend to sneak in when you stop trying so hard to grab them.
Okay, and this one about identity. Who you are is defined by what you're willing to struggle for.
This just shifts everything, doesn't it? Away from passive desire or fleeting pleasure towards active commitment and effort. It says your character isn't about what you want. It's about what you consistently do, especially when it's hard.
Powerful. And the core of responsibility. We don't always control what happens to us, but we always control how we interpret what happens to us, as well as how we respond.
That's the mantra of personal power right there. It takes the focus off external events, which are often random, and puts it squarely on your internal choices. Game changer.
Definitely. And finally, on failure. Improvement at anything is based on thousands of tiny failures.
This reframes failure completely. It's not the opposite of success. It's a part of the process. It's necessary data for learning and growing. Supports that do something principle. You have to be willing to fail repeatedly to get anywhere.
So putting this into practice, how can someone listening use these ideas like tomorrow?
Okay, let's take relationships. Apply the saying no principle. Think about your boundaries. Are you constantly saying yes to things that drain you or violate your values just to avoid conflict or disappointment? Practice saying no kindly but firmly to protect your energy and integrity. Don't give a fuck about the temporary awkwardness. Prioritize your well-being.
That's a tough one for people pleasers, but crucial. What about work or career?
Use the values-based framework. When looking at a job or project, don't just look at salary or status. Those are often bad values. Ask, what are the inherent problems involved in this work? Are these problems I find engaging or meaningful to solve? Remember Dave Mustaine?
Right, the Megadeth guy.
Yeah.
Massively successful by most standards.
But apparently miserable for years because his core metric was comparison being bigger than Metallica, something outside his control. Contrast that with choosing work based on the struggle you enjoy, the problems you find interesting, regardless of the external validation.
Choose the process, not just the outcome. God. And for everyday anxiety.
Immediately apply the feedback loop from hell concept. Next time you feel anxious or stressed or guilty notice, if you're starting to feel bad about feeling bad, if you are, consciously interrupt it. Acknowledge the first feeling. Okay, I'm feeling anxious about this presentation. Without judgment, just accept it as a signal. You'll be amazed how much that secondary panic dissolves.
Just acknowledging it takes away its power in a way.
It really does. It creates that breathing room.
You know, what I personally found really freeing from revisiting this is that idea of accepting your averageness.
Yeah.
It sounds negative, but it takes so much pressure off.
Yeah.
Yeah, like stop trying to be globally amazing at 10 different things. Just pick the one or two things that genuinely matter to you and focus on the often mundane process of getting a little bit better each day. It feels much more sustainable and honestly more satisfying.
It's about finding the extraordinary in the ordinary, maybe. Focusing on the process, like you said. And that really ties into Manson's final, most profound point, drawing from that acceptance of mortality.
The ultimate filter.
Exactly. Confronting the fact that your time is limited is the single most effective way to clarify what you truly value, what battles are worth fighting, what deserves your precious, limited fucks. So the final thought for you listening is really that question Manson forces us to ask. What are you choosing to give your last tracks about?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.